grab a beverage, settle in. When you're ready, we'll begin. Joe and Pat and Michael, too, are gonna talk comic books with you.
Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. Join us in our exploration of all things San Diego Comic-Con on this, the Casual Comics Cast,
Comic-Con at Home Edition.
Great at math.
How great are you at math?
I mean, there have been better people. I didn't get invited to like join Mensa or anything, but
what's the square root of 1,024?
Don't do this to me. I can't. Give me a calculator and I can do great math, but I can't do mental math.
Okay.
It's just not my forte.
So you are really good at using a calculator.
I'm like so good at using a calculator.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody. You got Joe and Michael here with talking about San Diego Comic-Con. Again, recap. And then we have a special treat for our listeners. So exciting. We have our own little mini panel where we will be talking to Dan Davis, the creator of All Luck Comics. Excited?
Super excited. Yeah.
So how's your San Diego Comic-Con at-home experience going so far?
It's going well. I watched a couple more things since we last spoke, and I'm having a good time. I feel like it's got a really nice sort of breadth of topics, and some are kind of serious and some are kind of silly. It's got something for everyone. So I kind of, every time I tune in, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to get, but I've liked what I've watched so far.
That's what I love about Comic-Con, especially if you tune into something that you're not exactly sure even what it is. An example is I just randomly tuned in to watch the HBO Max adult animation panel. I'm like,
whoa,
I know what HBO Max is. I didn't know they had a bunch of animation. But they had the creators of a lot of their stuff. They're taking over, it seems like, the Cartoon Network library, Adult Swim. You ever hear of it? Aqua Teen Hunger Force,
mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. They're taking all of that to HBO Max. So it looks like they've got a bunch of stuff. So they had Seth Green, and I can never pronounce the other guy's name, the creators of Robot Chicken. I don't know if you've ever seen Robot Chicken.
I have not seen Robot Chicken. Sounds thrilling.
You got to watch an episode of Robot Chicken before we come back. Robot Chicken is, they take action figures and just make little goofy skits, like with the superhero action figures. They like stop motion animate them. And it's really funny. There's a lot of funny Star Wars stuff in there, a lot of funny superhero stuff in there too.
So let me ask you this, because the word adult, I think it breeds a big question mark for me. Are we talking about just like comics and animation oriented towards adults in a very sophisticated way, or are we talking about sexy stuff? Because I it breeds two questions for me.
Right. It's not the sexy stuff.
I was gonna say, I'm very surprised that you chose to watch this one and talk about it on the podcast, but hey, all for it.
From the title, I wasn't sure what to expect, but I saw that Seth Green was on the panel, so I kind of figured out what it was gonna be. Gendy Tartakovsky, I can never pronounce his name either, the creator of Samurai Jack, among other things, was on there. And it was funny because none of them talked about their shows, really. They were just asking them to reminisce about their experiences at Comic-Con.
Oh, cool.
So they asked them, like, what's the one thing you won't miss about Comic-Con? What's the weirdest fan interaction you've ever had? That kind of stuff. So it was just some people, like, telling goofy stories about Comic-Con for about a half an hour. It was quite entertaining.
We've been doing that all week.
I know. I felt like...
Or you've been doing that all week.
I felt like I had better answers than some of those people. But like Seth Green had been talking about, him and his partner who do Robot Chicken together, they've both been to Comic-Con more than 20 times.
Oh, wow.
And then they had a different creator who has never been there, and they had another creator who had only been there 3 times. So very, very interesting. They touched a little bit on their shows, but it was more... I think it's just more branding and just making people aware that all of that stuff. Cartoon Network has a block of cartoons called Adult Swim that are just the sense of humor and the language and such is not, they just want you to know these aren't little kid cartoons to watch.
Got it. Okay.
So what did you watch?
I watched Zombies and Coronavirus.
Zombies and Coronavirus.
The planning for the next big outbreak.
And who was on that panel?
So it had the person that most people probably know kind of as a closer household name is Max Brooks. So the author of World War Z, we had talked about him yesterday a little bit. And then it had a lot of other experts in their field. So there were scientists and people who work in policy. And I apologize for not knowing all their names because it was a really interesting panel. But it was cool. So they started it off really talking about coronavirus. Whenever you have scientists and people who are from kind of these very like educated backgrounds, the introductions for these things last forever because it's like reading their dossiers. So like the introduction just of the people on the panel was like 5 to 10 minutes.
Right.
But it was really interesting because what they did is they said, you know, let's talk about what's happening now and what do we learn from what is happening in the world of coronavirus to sort of take forward and then applying it to the zombie apocalypse. And they all had really, really cool things to say. I mean, they were talking about kind of how we need to be looking at more than just virologists and go to like cross-functional areas of science to really better understand things and how maybe those industries and sort of expertise are siloed today. They're talking about, you know, the advances in science and technology that are helping with that are helping with getting vaccines out faster because, you know, it used to be you had to go like scavenge for a virus and send it and get it into different labs. And now they can just like send the sequences over the internet. And, you know, it's there's a lot more speed there.
Right.
One of the things I thought was really interesting was really actually from Max Brooks. And I think I've felt this in my life as someone who's been to school and loves school and is somewhat educated. But he's talking about how like science is great and there's so much information out there. And in his research and writing his book, he's read all these massive books and talked to the scientists and all these like smarties. And he's like, but if you can't translate all of this brilliance into something that the masses and the laymen can get, we're screwed. Like right. You have to find a way to make that information accessible. And he talked about how art and sort of the creatives of the world can build a bridge between the science and between the things that we need to know. And it's something that we've kind of failed to do in our modern day. Like it used to be how you educated people during World War II, and there's propaganda and there's all these different ways that we bring ideas to sort of like a simpler concept, and how we need to harness an army of storytellers to like get a schoolhouse rock going for like how to protect yourself against the coronavirus. Right. And I thought that was really apparent.
I tweeted at the beginning of this whole pandemic here that the only way we were going to make any progress was if Weird Al did a parody song about how to wash your hands correctly.
You're not wrong. I mean, I felt that in college, right? Like I'd be in a class that was super complex and I'd be like, can you just tell it to me stupid? Like if you can't simplify this into a message I can understand, then maybe you don't even get it because you're just saying fancy words.
Exactly. They've always said that the way that you know you've mastered a subject is when you can explain it in a way that a non-expert gets it.
Exactly. So I thought that was really powerful because it is a very simple concept, but something that we are kind of missing.
Cool. I did watch the Latin America horror cinema too. Sometimes mm-hmm. they come back. You know, there's a lot of movie stuff at Comic-Con, and it was a chance for me to see, and I recognized vaguely the name because I am a bit of a horror movie fan. Some of the names, but it wasn't until I tuned into the panel that I got, again, they kind of go through people's resumes and their backgrounds, but it was 6 different horror movie directors, all from different parts of Latin America, talking about, you know, a little bit of their experience making horror films and how that influences the way they come at it. So very interesting. The two that I thought were really fascinating were Gigi Guerrero, who I have not seen any of her stuff, but I am definitely interested to see now. She's from Mexico City, but living in Canada now and has her own small, it sounds like, production company. I forget what it's, Luchagor, I think. but through making short films, she said she made like a bunch of short films, put them on the internet. Some of them kind of got viral, and she got the attention of Eli Roth, who is the horror film director, very well known. And he really helped give her work a boost and hired her to work on a couple things. So I would love to check out some of her stuff. It sounds like some of her short films are on the internet to check out for free. And then Issa Lopez, who was the director of the movie Tigers Are Not Afraid, which I saw at the Gateway and was a really amazing movie. And she was really funny. She talked a little bit about, you know, Tigers Are Not Afraid was the first movie she wrote and directed. She was like, I wrote some, she's like, if you look at my, you know, bio, I've written some romantic comedies. And she's like, do not watch them, whatever you do. She's like, because other people directed them and ruined her vision. And I'm like, hey, that sounds familiar of writing a movie that someone else ruins.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably kind of commonplace. I think writers probably often feel that angst.
Sand sharks.
Sand sharks.
Actually, Sand Sharks is worth checking out, by the way, for those of you at home.
So you're going to tell this is your movie.
This is my movie. It's not. There are other movies that I'm less proud of, which especially comedy stuff does not translate. So Bro, What Happened is a movie.
You wrote a movie called Bro, What Happened?
You didn't know this?
Joe, I feel like I've been your best friend for a while now, and I just think there are things you've been holding back.
I have a story about Bro, What Happened.
In the era of like, dude, where's my car? Because that's what it sounds like.
Anthony, my buddy Anthony, who's a filmmaker, called me up and said, we're looking for a teen sex comedy. I was like, I am flattered you think I know anything about those three topics at all.
Genre. Teen sex comedy?
And the premise was we want something set on a college campus that is similar to the movie The Hangover. And so it was a big movie at that time. You know, kids wake up and don't remember what happened and have to piece it back together. I had a heck of a great time writing it. And then a heck of a great time trying to get credit for it when people made it into a movie without paying me and telling me that it was getting made.
What?
And then they ruined it. It is totally not worth watching because I feel for Issa here because I wrote this awesome, hilarious screenplay. And the parts that are lifted directly from my script are still hilarious to see on screen. The things that they changed are just mind-bogglingly awful. They're not even flat. They're terrible. And it's, I think they wanted to, the people who made it wanted to be in it as well. So they're like, you're like, why? This lady's like pushing 40. She's not a college student here.
You're not fooling anybody with your Botox.
Sorry. And I don't want to disparage I do want to disparage the people who made it because it's awful. And they stole my movie. I should write a movie called Bro, You Stole My Movie. I eventually did get paid. And then once I saw what they did, I immediately wanted my name taken off of it.
If I Google you,
and
if I go through like many pages of Google, I will
get
to...
If you go to IMDb, I have my own IMDb page. And Bro, What Happened is on there.
How did I not know this? This is ridiculous.
And Bro, What Happened is on there. And I wish it wasn't, but it is. And the best part is there is the reason that nobody could dispute that I wrote it is one of the main characters' names is MF Bob.
Oh yeah, definitely a you movie.
I was like, I can introduce you to the real MF Bob, and here's the total most MF Bob story, which is I found out this movie was coming out. I was excited because it was probably like the biggest movie I'd ever written, and I wrote the whole script myself. I'm like, oh, it's finally coming out. A lot of times they would take my stories and rewrite them into something different. And I was a script I was really proud of, and I saw still photos online of the cast. And do you know who Jamie Kennedy is?
Yes.
Jamie Kennedy plays MF Bob.
What? Oh my gosh.
And MF Bob is totally...
I've seen MF Bob. I don't feel like there's a similarity there, but I guess that's not relevant.
He looks a lot like Bob used to. And he's a sort of ne'er-do-well, probably too old to be hanging out with these college kids, but he lets them come over to his house to party all the time anyway.
We all knew that guy.
So that was MF Bob, and I called Bob excited. I was like, dude, I just found out they made that movie, and you know, I wrote you in as a character, and you're being played by Jamie Kennedy. And
he goes, thrilled?
I hate that guy.
MF Bob.
It's the most Bob thing you could do.
Never a more appropriate name was there. MF Bob.
Anyways, all the way back to Latin American Horror Cinema 2. I thought it was a really good panel. We'll talk more about my film career some other time. I thought it was really good talk to some film directors who have maybe a different background or a different perspective than some other people do. What else you watch?
The only other thing I've watched since yesterday was the Deep Blue Sea 3 panel.
Okay, Deep Blue Sea 3. Now, I'm not even familiar with 1 and 2.
What? Okay, well, we have to remedy this. We have to remedy it for one, because one is incredible. So this one, it's definitely a different sort of movie than the original two. The first one was in like an underwater lab, and it was all about like finding a cure for Alzheimer's, and sort of had a serious thread. But it's kind of a cult classic, and I love that movie. I've probably seen it more times than I can count.
Who's in the new movie?
The only person that there are famous people in this movie. So there are they kind of went through and introduced the whole cast, and all these people have different shows that you would know of that they've been in. But the one person I recognized was Tanya Raimondé. She's from Goliath.
Nope.
With Billy Bob Thornton. Oh, you got to see it. It's fantastic.
Oh, the Amazon series? I have not seen it.
Yeah. Oh, it's really good. But this one it's actually kind of more talking about global warming. They go to this like little fishing village where the water has risen, and now no one lives in this village anymore. And it is sort of a breeding ground for great whites. And so this woman is sort of there studying them. And, you know, they introduce the conflict, which is that there are these other people who are hunting these bull sharks that might be in the area. But you got a couple of sneak peeks for the movie. And I think the setting looks like it might be kind of cool for a film, and is different than the other movies in this sort of series. So I'll probably check it out because I love shark movies.
Nice. When is it coming out?
That's a great question, and I should know this.
I actually think
it might be by the end of the month, so anytime now.
Okay. Way to plug the product. We're not going to get any sponsorships at this rate.
I'm not getting paid. They're not putting my name in the credits. So.
Not with that attitude, you're not.
Google it, fans.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here because I think it's time for us to get on the phone with Dan Davis. We'll do an interview with Dan. We'll see how that goes. Talk to him about his creation and his new project that he's working on. And then after we talk to Dan, we'll be back to talk about what we're going to be watching on Comic-Con Saturday. So we're back now, and welcome back. We're with Dan Davis, the creator of All Luck Comics. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, guys. Welcome.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
So it is San Diego Comic-Con time. Are you following along, Dan?
As much as I can, yes.
Have you watched anything good?
Just the news.
Just new releases.
I can't tell you any panels. I haven't got any panels yet.
Well, there's a lot that's interesting going on. I think yesterday was pretty much a zombie day. Robert Kirkman everywhere.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are the creator of All Luck Comics, which we reviewed on the show, I'm going to say, before this pandemic broke out. This was published, in January? Am I right there?
Yes, you guys were one of the first to pick it up, so thanks for that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It randomly popped up on Comixology on my list of recommended things. I was like, well, let's check it out. We're looking for something to talk about, and I was really kind of blown away by it. It's really got this really cool retro feel. So for people who haven't heard it, they've heard me talk about it. Can you describe the comic for our listeners?
Well, it's a comic I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's my excuse to draw a lot of different genres that you don't see a lot anymore, and the type of comics that maybe aren't as prevalent as they used to be, where you can do a variety of characters. I may not stick with all these three characters I've started with forever, you know. I might throw in new things, but they've all got storylines going on, and it's kind of a retro tribute to the 60s type of stuff that you would see, Silver Age, and some Golden Age references in there, and genres where I can draw adventure comics or spy comics or space comics and not get bored with anything because I'm hopping around to a new one every time I turn around.
Yeah, I think that was one of the cool things about the comic is it is three short stories, Captain Luck, Undersea Adventurer, Spy 66, sort of retro 60s spy. I loved your view screen with all the spies on it, the Patrick McGoohan reference.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's great.
I guess I can get away with that. It's satire.
Right. And then the shortest, Blast Carson, but was a super intriguing like guy lands on Mars a million years ago. So
yeah.
That one was the shortest, but I mean that quick tease is really interesting. You got plans for Blast Carson here in the future?
Yes, they're all back in issue 2. They're getting into more trouble, more cliffhangers.
Right.
And Blast Carson is interesting because I wanted to combine dinosaurs, obviously, with a hero. And you can't do it on Earth because everybody knows they didn't exist at this time, you know. And everybody knows what the dinosaurs look like on Earth. But on Mars, I can make them anything I want them to be. So if I want them to be primary colors, just add creatures together and make new monsters and dinosaurs, I won't get called out for not being realistic.
Yeah, as I say, there's little kids everywhere who would be calling you out on that.
I've got
some baby cousins.
Right. And they'd know the names of them. But
yeah,
I don't
they
know.
Would.
Right. And looking at the published by All Luck Comics, says Kalina, Ohio. We're in Columbus.
Salina.
Oh, Salina. Sorry. I'm new to Ohio.
He's not a native of Ohio, and he doesn't quite get it.
Well, we are a little known town, so that's okay.
Are you familiar with where it is, Michael?
I don't know where it is. I know the name of the city. I'm native Ohioan, so at least.
Oh, and you guys are in Columbus.
We are, yeah.
We're based out of Columbus. Michael's talking to you from Sandusky right now.
That's right.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, we're over by the Indiana border, about midway between, Lima, Fort Wayne, Dayton.
Okay. Not too big of a jaunt, though, from Columbus.
2 hours away, yeah.
That's right.
So who were your main influences in your art style here?
Well, I think it's a combination. I worked in a lot of the animated styles at DC Comics, Batman Animated. I did Brave and the Bold and that kind of stuff. So Bruce Timm's a big influence, definitely. And obviously in the spy, it's Steranko and Kirby. I like their approach in the 60s, their technology and things like that. In Captain Luck, it's probably the Golden Age comic strip artists like Terry and the Pirates, Milton Kniff, and Roy Crane, who did Captain Easy, but modernized. I tried to modernize that so I didn't have to get just tied down to that period. I wanted to do modern things with that feature and also add a supernatural twist to it in the Bermuda Triangle. So we might have UFOs or all sorts of things.
I love it. Underwater UFOs? Or are
That's
we talking?
Very possible.
I can't wait.
Yes, underwater submersibles. Yes.
So when you do the art for this, are you doing all digital or is there a physical component to it? I'm fascinated by the comics creation process.
Oh, well, I used to be one of the paper guys, but about 2005, I got into Clip Studio Paint, which was Manga Studio back then. And I do everything in Clip Studio now. And the idea of being able to put the whole comic book together in one software package is really streamlining the whole process. And it really made me think that, well, I can do this. I can do the coloring, the lettering, everything all in one program. And they have a nice feature where it lays out all your pages and you can look at all the pages and move them around and edit things. And so it's all digital. And I usually kind of mix how I do it. Sometimes I have an outline. Sometimes I start drawing and then I'll figure out, well, this is going to work good for an opening and I need a middle and an ending and I'll come up with something. So it's kind of, I don't want to do a script and then have to do, draw my script. That doesn't make any sense if you're just an individual creator. And it makes it more fresh, I think.
Yeah, it's very cool. I think you're right. It comes through, talking through that process that the way that the panels are laid out is very conducive to the telling of the story. It's really integrated and the colors are just pretty amazing. I really enjoy the look of the book. Michael, you read it for the first time today. Is that right?
I did. It's very fresh.
Oh, good.
Well, I recall being interested when we did our initial review, and I loved that you had kind of, again, three short stories. I find sometimes, so I would say Joe gives me homework assignments, and sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, Joe, you're making me read forever. But I thought these were, they all captured you really quickly. The storylines were really interesting and different and fun, like a little bit of a twist on some classic themes. But I loved the Spy 66. I kept thinking about like fembots from Austin yes. Powers.
Well, that's a kind of a holy grail, Austin Powers.
Exactly. Well, we were watching Austin Powers clips last night with my baby cousin who's 7 because she didn't know what it was. But I thought this was a lot of fun. And I loved her storyline of like trying to prove herself. And she kind of winds up in this test that isn't maybe all intended to be the test, but she comes out with flying colors. So it was great.
I realized with the opening, it gave the impression she was maybe too much of an airhead. But I introduced the fact that she likes to wind up her father a little bit with that act. And she became competent through the test, I thought. So
exactly.
And she's bored because she's not being allowed to be the spy she wants to be.
Sure. I think, I don't know, my dad, I get this, right? You got to kind of, this is how you don't have to do things like mow the lawn. You know, you put on a little bit of an act and it suits your purpose.
So. I'm sure there'll be more of that relationship in there as the story progresses, for sure.
I thought it was great.
Thanks.
And I think it's really cool, too, that you're doing it all ages. So there's a lot of, you know, I grew up on comics that were, you know, in a different era. And now it's hard to find comics that I can share. My kids are a little older now, but like at that age, it's tough to find stuff for them to read. And I think the way that you handled some of the cursing in it is pretty funny, just with the little icons rather than any words.
Yeah, that's an old classic trope from the Golden Age.
Exactly. And it is suitable for all ages. So it's something that like as a parent, if you're into comics and you have really young kids, I don't want to come off like it's a kid story at all, but it's very kid appropriate that you can share with all ages, which I think is great now as a father who wants to get his kids into comic books.
Yeah, well, the Golden Age comic strips were really written for adults, but kids loved them too, and they didn't write them down to kids. So kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, I think. So I think they'll get it too.
Exactly. One of the things that it reminded me a little bit of, and I have not revisited any of it in a long, long time, but I remember growing up, my dad would bring home like Richie Rich comic books, and that was a character that had all kinds of different. One time he could be underwater sea diving. One time he could be fighting robots, all that kind of stuff. And it was one character, but could have very different genres that comic would play in.
Exactly. And I didn't want to get stuck in drawing a graphic novel that you wouldn't want to read because it was too long. And you could dive right into this stuff. And with the shorter stories, I got to have the action happen quick, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's you can tell that same story in 50 pages or 8 pages. And I kind of like the 8-page format.
I do too. And I think too, the way that you did it, right? Every panel has a lot of really interesting things going on. Like you could spend a while looking at each of them and kind of exploring the different things happening in each of the corners. I really loved that.
Yes, I tell it visually, I think. I'm a visual storyteller. And then I do it Marvel style, and then I write the dialogue in. Where I have an outline in my head, sometimes I'll jot it down, but then I draw the story. Next is writing it, and I'm lettering as I'm writing it, so which is kind of cool and saves time. And then I'll color and get it, hopefully, off to people.
Awesome. And you've got a new project now that we wanted to talk a little bit about.
The campaign on Indiegogo. Yes, we have issues 1 and 2. They're going to be printed for the first time, and I added some extra pages to the digital version of 1, which will give some extra backstory notes and insights. And I got a couple of my pals to do some variant covers, like Kevin West, John Royal, and Tim Levins. And they're making me look bad because they're such great artists. But I hope it'll bring some more eyes into the story.
That's really cool. When the Indiegogo project is live now, how long does that run?
It's live now. It's got about 50 days left, and which is good because I'm drawing the Spy 66 story right now that will get printed. So I'm hoping to share that as I go along in the campaign a little bit. And we've got different perks. I've got a couple where I'll do original art commissions if they want to go that direction. But I had to put some limit on it because I really want to draw the comic book more than do that. But it's my first campaign, and that's been a whole learning curve and things feature. But it's coming along. I think I understand it now, and I can pick up the pace here if we do some more.
Very cool. And the, your collaborators who are doing the variant covers, are they working a physical medium? Are they doing it all digital and just shooting it over to you?
Different ways. Tim did his digital. John drew it on paper, sent me the actual artwork, too. I have his pencils. Kevin did his on pencils, and he sent it to me digitally, and then I inked and colored all three covers. So I didn't realize I was making more work for myself. Oh, there's variant covers. These will be great. And then I said, oh, I have to ink and color three more covers. It's going to...
Some
take
work.
Time.
Yeah.
So I will try and provide a link to the Indiegogo in our show notes here with the podcast. But if people want to look it up, what's the easiest way to get to that page?
Well, if they're on Indiegogo, if they just put that title in the search, that's the easiest, quickest way. So if they're on Instagram, they can look at my profile, and I have a link in my profile.
Okay, so Indiegogo, and then they search for All Luck Comics, is that?
All Luck Comics Adventure, to actually narrow it down, yeah.
Very cool.
And, when and I will send you a link that you can use by your email. I have your email here, so.
Very cool. So are you a comics, it sounds like you're very inspired by old comics. Is there anything you're reading now that you would recommend?
Well, the last thing I got was Adventure Man by Terry Dodson, which is kind of an old pulpy. It fits right in, I guess. And so I could definitely endorse that. Terry's art is just gorgeous. So
fantastic.
Very nice.
Mostly I go to the old stuff, though, I have to admit. I'll reread my Steranko's Nick Fury Shield even before I start a new Spy 66 story to get in the mood.
Nice.
Very cool.
Nice. Yeah, I just went, I talked to Michael about it on one of our previous podcasts. They had a comic show here in Hilliard, Ohio, and braved the, put my mask on, went out, washed my hands, but came home with about 300 pounds worth of comic books from,
oh my gosh.
From my, not 300 pounds, literally, but it was four giant grocery sacks full. It's about 300 comic books.
Yeah, it's hard to resist.
From that era.
And I missed going to the cons. I would be out at the conventions because I haven't gone recently because I do comic strips and I don't have anything to sell really. But now that I have my own comic book, I would probably be out at conventions if I could, but we're not, we're doing it this way.
Well, I think it's fantastic. I can't wait to see it. I wish you best of luck in continuing. I'm super looking forward to seeing some more of the Blast Carson and of Rita Castro here. I want to see how that story progresses. there's a little bit of a I'm sensing friendly antagonism between her and Captain Luck here brewing.
I like to keep people guessing about the characters, which way they're going is, you know, you don't know if Looter, the billionaire, is he a bad guy or a good guy? And is Rito a good guy or a good gal? I don't know. We'll find out. I did give Blast Carson more pages in this next issue. So okay. I hope
very cool.
I like that name. It reminds me of Mystery Science Theater 3000 where they had like, you know, Blast Hard Chest or... Dirk
it kind of just tells what it's going to be like, doesn't it? The title.
Yeah, it tells you everything you need to know, right?
Just right, in the that's the whole concept name. Wrapped up there in the title. So I hope that's good, and I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. And, really thrilled to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us today, Dan. We appreciate your time, and like I said, I'm super excited to see the outcome of this, and we will definitely review it and hit you up on social media when we finally get a chance to see it.
Okay, would love to talk more about it, and thanks very much.
Awesome. right. Well, thanks to Dan for being on the show. That was pretty cool, Michael. Is that the first time you ever interviewed a comic book creator?
It is. That was awesome.
All right. Well, I'll let you take the lead on the next one now that you're a seasoned pro.
Oh, don't do that to me.
All right. Well, that was great. Everybody, you know, please support Dan's stuff on Indiegogo. It's a really fun comic book. If you haven't checked it out, it's available to download on Comixology. And I'm really looking forward to getting a printed copy of this in my hands someday.
Me too.
So back to Comic-Con, there was one more thing that I watched, which was Hulu's Hellstrom.
Hellstrom.
You should pronounce it that way. Hellstrom. Do it.
Hellstrom.
You got to get into the Hellstrom spirit. I don't know much about Hellstrom, which is why I watch it Hellstrom. Now I'm doing it. I can't stop.
Oh, my gosh. Now you're crazy.
It is a new show coming to Hulu that is based off a Marvel character that I don't know a ton about because Marvel is such a vast universe. They had the showrunner and the cast on and did a sneak peek of this, which is a more of a, it's part of Marvel's horror line of universes. So Damon, I always thought it was Damien, but they said it's Damon is how they pronounce it. But I think it's
It's D-A-I-M-O-N.
I was mildly dyslexic or something.
The I is in the right place for him to be Damien.
It's Damon.
You're just thinking of that famous movie.
Damien. Well, because the actual title of the comic book was Son of Satan.
Yeah.
So he is literally, as I understand it, the Son of Satan.
So is he the good guy?
I don't know. I don't know much about Hellstrom.
It says that he's the son of a serial killer.
Yes, and it looks creepy that, like, in the trailer, he's visiting his mom, who looks like she's in a mental asylum.
Oh, man.
And the cast was talking about this mental hospital that was abandoned that they were recording, and they're like, that place is definitely haunted. It's definitely haunted.
Love it. Love it.
For those of you who may be sensitive to such things, hopefully none of our listeners are, they literally spend, though, the first, like, 10 to 15 minutes of the panel talking about social justice stuff, of what's going on in the world today, which I enjoy. It can be a little heavy in a time where we're all locked in our homes to be reminded of it, but they're very passionate about that topic. They spend a bit of time talking about it, which I don't know why I feel like I need to talk about it. It can be a little heavy. I enjoyed hearing their perspective on what's going on because they have a very diverse cast. But there is, I mean, I was surprised that they spent that much time in a Comic-Con panel talking about that. But it's obvious that the showrunner's super passionate and thinks that these issues still need to be paid attention to, which, you know, I kind of agree. Not to get all political.
But to get all political.
But to get all political, yes. So surprising thing to hear at the beginning of what I thought is going to be based on a comic book that is based off of the literal son of Satan to be lectured on morality a little bit.
I think there's some confusion happening here though, because he's the son of Satan and the son of a serial killer. So is the serial killer then Satan?
There's gotta be two parents, right?
Well, there's three parents. You said he's got a mom in an insane asylum. Yeah. I guess she could be the serial killer.
Yes. Why are you? See, look
there's,
at you.
There's so much to figure out.
You're just assuming that a woman can't be a serial killer, Michael. Now,
we talked about Eileen Wuornos yesterday.
And we're sitting here talking about diversity right now. And you're like making these assumptions.
I was just
women
having a moment.
Can do anything men can do.
I love that you're telling me this.
They can be serial killers if they want to be.
You're making me want to be a serial killer right now with the attitude.
they only get 70% of the credit for their crimes that the men get, though, to the do equal.
Oh, you.
So that rounded out my day on Friday. It looks like it's going to be really creepy and scary. I don't know if that's my gig, but definitely worth checking out for people who are into horror television shows. Yesterday was a lot about horror television shows. I feel like at some point I may try and get myself caught up on all the Robert Kirkman stuff, all of the random stuff that was about horror. So like I said, I watched a horror panel. There is one panel that I didn't get to see yet that I'm definitely going to check out, The Wonderful Horrible World of EC Comics. EC Comics used to publish like Tales from the Crypt.
Ooh, I love Tales from the Crypt.
Yes. So what's on your list to watch today, Saturday?
Guillermo del Toro and Scott Cooper on Antlers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, that lady, Issa, who worked on, that we were talking about from the Latin horror stuff, she's working on a project with Guillermo del Toro right now.
Ah, so cool. His stuff is so amazing. I put down a bunch of things. I don't know if I'll check out all of these. I have Surviving the Hunger Games. I have Ahoy Comics Expect More.
Oh, yeah.
I have AMC's Nosferatu. And I did mark an evening with Kevin Smith because you basically told me that I will never get to really see an evening with Kevin Smith in person because it's so hard to get in. So this might be my one chance.
Not Bill and Ted Face the Music, though.
I didn't put that one down, not because I'm not interested. I guess I just didn't check the box. I don't know.
Well, there you go. On my list today are, I think I've talked a lot about what's on my list today already, but very excited for there's a Doctor Who, which is a cross, what do you call it? A cross-platform experience, multi-platform Doctor Who story. It's called Doctor Who Time Lord Victorious. There will be comic books, novels, audio performances, and digital stuff that all go into telling this story, Time Lord Victorious, that I'm super excited about as a Doctor Who fan that they're doing some of this stuff. The radio dramas are pretty awesome for Doctor Who, so I recommend for people who've never listened to some of the radio dramas, they're really good. I haven't done enough comic book stuff, so there's a comic book involved in that. Creating memorable characters of Image Comics. Image Comics is a really awesome publisher for people who don't know about it. Jeff Lemire will be on that panel, and I'm very interested to hear him. He writes a couple really awesome comics that I like. I'm reading Descender right now, Michael. You should probably read Descender. It's really good.
Descender. Okay.
Descender. Hopefully they'll have a good moderator there. And then at the same time as An Evening with Kevin Smith is Unnecessary Debates, which I am hoping will be funny. It promises, it says that they're funny people debating nerdy stuff. So I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds right up your alley.
Sounds exactly. And then I don't know how these watch-along movies work. I guess you go to Scener.com, which is something that lets you watch movies as a group. Tonight they're screening Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And then Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame back-to-back for people who want to watch that.
You're basically doing nothing but this.
If you want to. Are you talking about me today? Yes, today I'm doing nothing but this.
Yeah, I'm like, you're doing nothing but this all day. This is a full-time gig today.
Gosh, they keep adding new stuff. I got to put this Marvel United. See firsthand. It's a first ever full playthrough of the highly anticipated tabletop game Marvel United. I might have to check that out. And then Tomb of Horrors with Luke Gygax and friends in the gaming track. I got to do that.
I hope that your wife and kids aren't trying to see you this weekend because you're going to just be downstairs in your man cave.
Anna will be on with us again at some point. She's watching these with me. But for those, I'm sorry, this is like super nerdy. This is not really comic related, but Tomb of Horrors is a super classic Dungeons and Dragons adventure.
Ooh.
From back in the day. Everybody played Tomb of Horrors. Everybody knew Tomb of Horrors. And this is Dungeons and Dragons creator Gary Gygax, his son Luke Gygax, is going to be the dungeon master for a band of celebrity players playing through this Dungeons and Dragon adventure. I gotta see this, Michael. And it starts in how long? A few hours. Definitely watching that. So that's what I got on tap.
Well, you better get started.
And I haven't had my pretzel dogs yet.
I haven't either.
But I had so much coffee this morning to help me wake up.
I can tell. You're spazzed.
And people can't see it, but I'm getting Comic-Con hair, too.
I don't know what that is, but it's
just this.
Interesting. I can see that it's interesting, whatever it is.
All right.
Well, we'll talk in a few hours.
Talk to you in a bit, Michael. Cheers, cheers.
Cheers, cheers. Bye-bye.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, @CasualComicsGuy, at our blog, CasualComicsGuy.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.